for the Western Sydney Women's Oral History Project, From Farms to Freeways, Women's Memories of Western Sydney. This interview is taken with Mrs. Heather Corr of Penrith on the 21st of November 1991.
Heather Corr, 151 Derby Street, Penrith. And the date of birth is the 10th of April 1923, born in Penrith, in a house, and I'm a widow and Australian, and I have three children.
So first of all, I'll ask you some questions about your background. What did your father do? What kind of work?
He was a bootmaker, we called it then. Yes, bootmaker, and also an orchestra. He had his own orchestra.
Musician.
Mm.
And what about your mother? Did she work?
Only when she was very young and single, and she worked for, I think she may have been, Fletcher's, who were the original super, or what do you call it, department store in Penrith, and she worked originally for them. And more or less in the house and then in the shop to assist when he was going around, Mr. Fletcher, with his, as a door-to-door salesman. And
what sort of work would she have done at home? Accounts or something like that?
No. I think helped with the children. Helped in the house.
Right. Oh, in their house.
In their house, yes, with the children, yes. And then Fletcher's took both my aunts, who were her two sisters, as employees. But one was a renegade, she wouldn't be sort of held down, and whereas
a
the
free
other
spirit.
A free spirit she was, yes, and then this. Mrs. Gibbons actually worked for Fletcher's for many years, many, many years.
Mm. And so you were born here, your family
yes.
lived here when you were born.
Yes,
so
yes.
You've been here all your life.
That's right. Mm.
And in this house or?
Oh, no. In a, actually, on the way to the cemetery, it's we used to call it Upper Henry Street, which is now Cox Avenue, and my grandfather bought the original hospital site of Penrith. It was the first hospital site of Penrith, and he bought that and built a house for themselves there. And then when I was about seven, I can remember, he built a house next door on the same land, for my mother, and then built a house for her sister right next door. So we've always lived with the grandmother here, our family right beside, and then my aunt right beside that.
So you've always had a nice extended family.
Family. That's right, yes.
And I guess your mother depended on the extended family when you were small.
Any help, that's right. And large areas of land right beside it, which are all built on now. Houses, vacant land.
So you didn't have close neighbours?
No,
as a child.
Not as farm areas, but it was a residential area that we lived in, and I can't think of the metrics length, but there were about three houses that we were very close friends with who lived in the street.
Mm-hmm.
More or less family too, We all call them auntie and grew up with their families and was very, very close.
And what was the landscape like? Was it
bush.
Yeah.
And my grandfather had right down the backyard onions he grew and trees and his onions were renowned. They were put in the Sydney show, Royal Show, they were chosen. Specialty of my grandfather. But he had all the vegetables and all the trees and the whole area under development, of garden and trees.
And was that for your own use?
Only our own use, or giving away.
Yes, right.
The majority was given away, you know, but the families sort of used it. Yes. And he was a foreman on the council, Penrith Council. There were no engineers or qualified fellows in those days, and my grandfather was the foreman on the council, so of course was home 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon and then sort of set to and worked in the garden. Loved it. Yes. So.
And then your when your parents they lived next door to the grandparents.
That's right.
And so had it changed much from that when you were a child, when you were growing up there?
No, that was all the
it
same.
Was still bush.
Yes, bush, and because we played in all the paddocks beside us. Actually, it's Housing Commission who took it all over. And I can't sort of recall how long that would be, but I mean, my growing up days were all with the bush and playing cricket, and we used to have bonfires and the spare paddocks up the street, and that was a big deal, the Empire Day.
Yeah.
We'd go over to the showground for a parade of floats in the which weren't very polished, but that was Empire Day. It was quite a day. And then, of course, I think that was a public holiday too,
yeah.
Empire Day, the 24th of
yes,
May.
Yes, it was.
Yes. And then we'd have the big bonfire at night, and everybody used to come. All our relatives and everybody used to come because we could have it out here, whereas in Sydney, you know, there were areas and that, but that was a big deal in our life.
And do you go to school here?
I went to school at Penrith Infants, which is the one down there in Henry Street, and then later to Penrith Primary up here, which automatically went to Penrith High School, which is the Penrith Primary School now, the building.
Right.
And that turned into Penrith High School. We had the headmaster, FRB, Baker, Mr. Baker, who was a fantastic headmaster. Anybody who went to school in those years would know of FRB. That's what we always called him.
Why was he so special?
Very strong, but very fair. And if FRB said anything, you know, it was... yes, and you'd really... And I think our parents sort of appreciated the strength of the man too. He was a very, very strong headmaster.
And did you walk to school?
Yes, walk to school.
You lived close by, did you?
Well, it is quite close. We're like from the other side of the railway line to where this school is
right.
On the corner now. Yeah. And we used to have the railway gates up at the top. They were called Henry Street Gates, I think. And they used to have a gatekeeper who we were friendly with because, like, close friends. And actually my aunt still visits the Breeze, who originally were the gatekeeper, you know, and there's one remaining person. And she still has the alliance with Ella.
So that was a level crossing.
A level crossing, yes.
And when that, I suppose that went when the electric trains came through,
didn't it? Yes. It was there for, like, all my growing up years sort of thing. It was a gate because there were other people after the Breezes when my parents died and everybody had moved away. But we were very, very close friends with all those people who lived in the upper part of Penrith sort of thing.
They had a nice community spirit there.
Yes, very close. And something which isn't now, although my block where I'm living here still has people who have been here for 30 and 40 years, and that makes a big difference too.
So you still very friendly with your immediate
neighbours? Immediate neighbours, yes, until they put the flats in around here somewhere, which is coming.
Yeah.
yes. I don't know how long we can sort of resist it, but we'll try.
And so what was it like, how did you feel about walking to school, and did you have a lot of freedom in those days? There wasn't much traffic, I suppose.
No. You weren't allowed to go away from home. I mean, when you think of it now, I had a girlfriend who lived somewhere around here, probably one street, and I was never ever allowed to go to Joyce's unless I was sort of taken. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have a car for many, many years, and until probably I was a teenager, I think. We had bikes, but until you were about 13 or 14, I mean, you had to be escorted. Yes. Right across the bushes, because it'd be bush all the way through to here. And so you weren't allowed to... That was too far for me to go after school and play.
Yes.
So I'd always have to go home. But I can always remember I had a serge tunic with a beautiful material. I can still feel it. For the 3 years of high school, brown serge tunic and a white blouse, summer and winter, the same tunic. Everybody did. Everybody.
It must have been very hot in summer.
Well, I mean, we lived with it, and it was a hotter summer than what you get now, and no air conditioning, and we lived with it, and no fans in the school, and no carpet, and no air conditioning in the school, you know, you open the windows and get a westerly.
Yes.
Yes, so different living.
And what did you, how did your mother manage the household? Did she do her shopping locally?
Yes, but the thing is that we always had Neil's, who had the store up here. A fellow came once a week and took the order. The butchers were Woods's. The fellow would come and take the order. Mm-hmm. And fruit and vegetables. Now, fruit and vegetables, I can't remember. But, see, we probably didn't have to buy that much because of the great big area we had with my grandfather sort of developing. Fruit and veggies there. We lived with the vegetables that came out of the garden. New potatoes. Oh, I've never tasted anything like it since. You know, always had new potatoes. It was ridiculous, really. And but no, and they'd deliver. You know, they'd come round and take the order. My mother very rarely went out. You know, she lived in the house and washed and ironed and cooked and cooked and cooked.
Made all her own preserves and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, everything, yes.
And did she sew too?
Yes, and sew and made clothes, especially during the Depression. I can remember, you know, we used to have cut down things and, I mean, Mum has always sort of made things out of men's trousers for the boys and that sort of thing.
You were one of how many children?
Four. Two boys and two girls. I was the eldest. I had to make the breaks everywhere.
And did you go to high school at Penrith too?
I went to high school, but of course it only went to third year, to the intermediate level in those days. Mm-hmm. And then you had to travel to Parramatta. Well, very few of us... I can't remember very many of our third years who did, you know, who travelled to Parramatta to high school. And yet my father grew up in St Mary's and went to St Mary's school, but he went to high school in Parramatta, so maybe there wasn't a high school.
No, I think there wasn't.
There wasn't a high school here, so...
Cause not in St Mary's.
No, well, he travelled to Parramatta High School. Yes,
my
father.
There was one here, but I'm not sure.
Yes. Isn't it?
Maybe not then.
No, I should ask this fellow that I know who grew up with Dad, who is still living, and because it's rather interesting when you think way, way back in those years that they may have travelled, whereas you really were cut off in that degree because, and yet, at 14 years of age, I left with the intermediate and I travelled to Sydney to Comptometer College. So, I mean, I was only about 14 and a half or something when I started travelling to Sydney on my own. Yes, and then I got a job at Mallee's because they'd get you a job from the Comptometer School in Martin Place, it was, and they got me a job at Mallee's, which was fabulous, out at McAvoy Street, Redfern.
Oh, yes.
And I used to travel from Penrith to there, working Saturday mornings. Mm-hmm. And I was 15. I must have been 15 and a half or something when I did that.
So what, that'd be sort of early 40s then, wouldn't it?
No, that'd be 30s. It'd be late 30s, yes. Mm. Yes, because I worked at a bank for 9 years until I was married. and that was 48 when I left.
So you were married in 48?
1948.
So did you move into your own house when you were married?
No, my grandfather divided. Well, it was just post-war, and my grandfather, in those days, everybody said you had to wait. You know, you'd wait because things were going to alter after the war. Things were going to alter. You couldn't buy tiles, you couldn't buy wood, you couldn't get anything to build a house. And my grandparents had a large house, so they divided it and made it into a flat for me prior to our wedding, and which was marvellous when I think about it now, because it was a bedroom and a side veranda and a lounge room and a great big dining room, which they put a little kitchenette in, and a bathroom, everything self-contained, you know. And we lived there and bought a block of land, and everybody was waiting, everybody, I think, in those days, for something to happen, because everything had been altered so much with the war. And we finally decided to build. I can remember we paid £180 for a block of land which runs into this place in Lethbridge Street. And we started to build 4 years on from when we were married. And my husband had to go down to the wharves to pick up and load the tiles onto a truck. That was the only way we could get tiles for the roof, and they were Indian tiles. They're still there on the house over there. And that was the only way you could get tiles. This house was built the same time, about 12 months before. And the tiles in the bathroom, you had no choice of colour. What came in, you took. They were pink. and maroon as a contrast, so that wasn't too bad. Different things. The floorboards are Baltic pine, is it? I know they were different floorboards, and they were narrow, little tiny floorboards. You sort of had to put up with what you got. And we bought our fridge, which came out from England. And in 1948, that's right, just before our wedding, my husband worked in the council here, and he bought a fridge which was a Ritemp in 1947, it would have been, and then we put it into the flat and started using it.
A Ritemp
fridge. It was faulty in the first couple of months. They gave us a new motor, and it's still downstairs, and that's the best fridge. Never
really?
Paid a penny.
Still works.
It's still going downstairs. And the drinks are colder, ice cold.
It's incredible.
Yes. And that's since 48.
And did your mother have a fridge in her house too?
Ice chest. I can remember the ISO coming, you know. It used to come with the thing. I've seen them with claws, but I mean, we didn't. We had it with a chaff bag or something that he used to come and load into the top of the ice chest. And but I think now, when they show you ice being delivered, it's always on a claw that holds it.
Yeah.
Yes, well, it was always a chaff bag. I can remember coming in and dropping in, you know. So we only have had an ice chest when I was little.
Yes, and when you were little, did your mother have other electrical appliances like vacuum cleaners and that sort of thing?
Or? That's what I can't remember, but I don't think so. I can't remember seeing a vacuum cleaner. Because I think it was mats more than carpet. You know, we didn't have carpet, what I can remember. And we had my grandmother. See, we must have lived there until I was about eight with my grandparents. And that's why the house was so big. And it was a scrubbed, I can always remember. And they do it these days, you know, for when they're showing you history. Scrubbing the oak table. Oak table? Pine table or something.
Yeah.
That's the phone.
And
yes, well, the pine table, that was in what in those days was their, well, the kitchen and laundry. The laundry was outside, and the kitchen was a little tiny kitchen with a fuel stove in the corner. How they ever survived in cooking, I don't know. But I mean, and it was always on a Sunday you had to have your baked dinner. I mean, Sunday dinner. and you always had all the relatives and friends that would come. And this great big scrub table, that's how she'd serve it in there, on the scrub table, which was dipped and worn, but had lovely, a flangey sort of an edge. I can still see that on the table. That's the kitchen, or kitchenette, or whatever you'd call it, and it had a big fire there beside it. And my grandfather used to sit and make toffees until the day he died. He'd sit there and we'd always have wound toffees made on this fire in the this big room that was beside the little tiny kitchen. I don't know, you'd probably call it a breakfast room, I guess, but it was too big for a breakfast room, and this great big table, because the dining room was adjoining that. So, but my grandmother, she'd be there, and I can still see her, because she was an absolute delight, with the perspiration and the fuel stove, you know. Ah, dear, memories.
And does that house still stand?
No, that was pulled down. We sold it, or my aunt's two aunts sold it, and it was there until about 6 years ago, I think, and they bought it and pulled it down and built flats, and there's about 12 flats on it now, Housing Commission flats, two-storey flats. And we had an old well out the back, which was the original well from the hospital, the first hospital, and nobody would take any notice of me when I tried to tell them, you know, that that well had history to me. And we used to put... not that I can ever remember much about drink, but probably Christmas time, the beer bottles or your ginger beer down in and tie them down, put them in the well. That was the way to keep things cold. And
the well's gone too, has it?
Well, they've built over the well or done something. I mean,
how did you feel about it when the place was demolished?
Well, sad, because it was called Dull Dorrance, which is Dulcie, Dorry, and Florence, and I mean, anybody who knew my family always said, oh, such memories with Dull Dorrance. I've got an elderly, it'd be a third cousin removed or something, you know, and I often sort of get a note from her, and she'll always say, such memories of Dull Dorrance. She even composed a poem when we had a family get-together about Dull Dorrance, because they used to always... We lived in the country here, and of course they lived in Balmain, this particular family, and so it was fantastic to come up here, right out into the country for the day. But Dull Dorrance was, it's a shame it was pulled down, and we tried to trace to get the name, you know how they used to have the names, yes, on the places, and couldn't ever find it.
What a shame.
Yes, you know, you think of things too late.
Yeah.
This is it. Mm.
So when you were married and you built your own house eventually, you had all mod cons, the fridge and, I suppose...
Yes,
electric
toasters, yes,
and
everything.
Junks.
Yes, I can't ever remember doing some scrubbing or anything.
What about the bathroom that was inside, wasn't it? In your
yes, internal, room? Yes.
Was it in your parents' home? Had that been...
No. The one that... actually, George Hudson, and I don't know whether this... Hudson with an H is the offshoot, but George Hudson houses, so what would Mum's be now? It's still standing there, and it was a standard house that you bought, and see, my grandfather built it, because George Hudson would deliver
the ready cut,
and there's numerous houses, you know, I mean, our standard phrase is when you go past or drive past something, oh, that's a Hudson house. Oh. And it's just incredible, but, you know, people these days don't know about it, and I'd love to know whether Hudson with an H is the George Hudson,
yes.
That used to be. It could be some, because it's timber. And Anyhow, but we had the toilet, because, oh, to have a toilet inside. I can remember when my aunt built her house, Mrs. Gibbons, later, I don't know what year that was, but she was putting a toilet inside. And, well, you just didn't know how you were going to have a toilet inside. No, it wasn't luxury. It just wasn't, health-wise to have a toilet inside, because our place was built with a bathroom, an internal bathroom, and then you went down the back stairs to the toilet, mm-hmm. which
this
was down...
This is the house you built?
This is the house my grandfather built for my parents. Mm-hmm. And they had the laundry downstairs, down the steps, it's not downstairs, about seven steps, laundry, and the toilet, outside toilet, built beside that, all under a little awning so that you didn't have to go outside. But and we built a toilet when we built the house over here in 1950, it'd be 51, say, and we still put the bathroom inside. You came out through the kitchen and the toilet was outside. Yes, so it's strange how you sort of grow up with that idea. Yes, yes.
And you would have had the sewer then.
Yes, sewered. That's right. Oh, we used to have my grandfather, grandparents' house, you used to walk right down, and of course it was lined either side with November lilies in November. It was absolutely gorgeous and always had flowers down the pathway, right down the back to the toot. And who used we call him? Sam, the sanitary man. And Mr. McDougall. Mr. McDougall. I think it's the name to go with it. Mr. McDougall was the sanitary man. Yes, yes. Quite a few jokes about that too, but
yes,
still. Yes.
And what about when you had your children, or did you work when you were first married?
No. I was married in 1948, and I wasn't going back to work. My husband worked here in the council, and in 1949 I found I wasn't falling pregnant, so I sort of had some tests and that, and found that I couldn't have any children. But my husband still wouldn't, there's no working. But my aunt had the tuck shop at the high school. When the high school first opened, which would be probably about 1950-something, the new high school, this is, the Towers. And I went and worked with her for quite a while in between time, waiting to fall pregnant, and then we adopted two children. And then I had a child about, I can't think what the difference between Deb and Barb is, 33 and 30, nearly 31. So it came in beautifully. But James is the eldest one, and Debbie, and then Barbara.
So you adopted them as babies, did you?
One was 12 days old and one was 10 days old. Oh, yes, really? Yes. After about 9 years of waiting, I think it was. Really? Yes, yes. So.
And what was the adoption process like in those days? Was it difficult?
Well, it was hard. It took quite a while. I mean, once the doctor sort of said that I, was... because you had to have the medical thing that there was something wrong with you. And after going for tests to Sydney, it was the most horrific thing to go through to prove that you weren't, you couldn't have children from both the male and the female. And we sort of applied through the child welfare, I think that's what we used to call it. And they called us in once after about 4 years or something. And you more or less had everything ready. You had clothes and everything. And they called us in, and when the girl interviewed us, she said, oh, no, you couldn't have this child. You know, she's fair, or he's fair, and he's redhead, and the background of the family, the two that had had conceived this child. So we came back disappointed. And anyhow, then we were called in another day, and I think it was about 9 years. Probably not that long from when our application went, but it was a long time in those days. And we were called in and interviewed, and then they brought the girl who had seen the mother and the babe, and they agreed that it'd be all right. So off we went out to Crown Street, I think it was. And anyhow, it was, you know, we my family now say that he was the ugliest baby they'd ever seen. And and James, we picked him up and brought him home, and he was undernourished, underfed and everything. And from the day we brought him home, he was sort of more or less a chosen child, and that's how they've grown up, as being chosen. And we were assured in those days that there'd be no way that anybody could ever sort of find out who they were, what they were. And of course, look what's happened with now. I've written to Nick Greiner and everywhere, and my daughter's written, and you feel threatened. Well, I don't, but they do. Yeah. They both feel threatened now, these days, because they wouldn't put a...
Excuse me.
Yes.